Welcome to the Art Scene, presented each week by UALR Public Radio. Independence Day 2016 is already a week gone. Labor Day and Election Day, hard on its heels, but today's guest is wrapping up 2016-17 and hatching plans for 17-18. And of course, it's Philip Mann, the Arkansas Symphony's music director-conductor, to take us through the orchestra's 16-17 masterwork season. And what a year lies ahead. First, it's the Arkansas Symphony's 50th anniversary. Then, fittingly, Robinson Auditorium opens its newly furbished welcoming doors in November. But from the first two concerts in Mormel's Performing Arts Center, when, incidentally, this Beethoven symphony, the 7th, is on the second concert, to the closing festivities with Beethoven and Blue Jeans, there are celebrations and surprises.
The season that we have coming up is probably the most important and historic in the history of the ASO. We have not only our 50th anniversary celebrations, we have the opening of our new concert hall in the renovated Robinson Music Center, and then we also have all of these wonderful other opportunities to hear the orchestra in our alternative venues and our alternative series, really put together a whole kind of cornucopia of opportunities to hear the orchestra that have not always been there. We open the Masterworks series in Maumelle, two performances before the opening of the new Robinson Center. And my approach to these performances, the programs, was really to fully take advantage of this wonderful opportunity that we have to be in this space that has a great deal of intimacy and connection with the performers. One of the comments that we've constantly get about the performances in Maumelle, how well you can hear the music and how connected the audience feels with the individual performers, because you're closer to them. The intimacy of the space, only 1,250 seats, means that it's a one step closer to chamber music. So my thinking in programming these works on these two Masterworks programs that remain in Maumelle is, how can we fully utilize that really wonderful attribute of the space? So we open up with an opportunity to hear a Mozart piano concerto. And for me, this is one of the great examples of chamber music in an orchestra, is when you can have a soloist, an orchestra, and a classical repertoire communicating, conversing, and in kind of a spontaneous fashion, finding our way through an absolutely magical masterpiece of a piece, and that's the 21st concerto of Mozart. And we have returning to the ASO by popular demand, Eliso Bolkvatsa. And Eliso is a Georgian pianist. She lives in Paris, plays all over the world. She's a laureate of the Van Cliburn competition. Most recently, though, she's received the highest order that France gives to artists, and she's been named by the United Nations UNESCO World Artist for Peace. So we've often, Eliso and I, talked about trying to do something that was more intimate. You know, we've done these big programs, like she was here for the Saint-Saëns Second Piano Concerto. I've worked with her with many other orchestras in Europe. And we thought, you know what we really want to do? Let's do some Mozart together. And I thought, it's one of his most mature pieces of the genre, and it's certainly one of his most popular and loved. And it fits together with two other works on the program that also kind of exemplify this classical ethos. The first is the Fifth Symphony of Schubert. I often talk to musicians about the importance of singing through their instruments. There perhaps has been no composer in history who really understood the human voice better than Schubert. And we look at his songs, we look at his chamber music, his orchestral works, and he asks the musicians very much to sing through their instruments. In the Fifth Symphony, it's a smaller orchestra. It's a classical-sized orchestra, not much different than the Mozart, in fact. It gives us a chance to kind of build relationships amongst the musicians by singing together. It really, truly is chamber music. And I've been wanting to do something like a Schubert mini festival since I came to Arkansas, and I'm happy to say that this is what's coming to fruition next year. So the Schubert Fifth Symphony is actually also the first example of Schubert on our Schubert Festival that will then appear on our, also works of his will appear on our Ink series, on our River Rhapsody programs, and then again on Masterworks. So we have one of my favorite works of Schubert, the Fifth Symphony, with a great Mozart Mozart Piano Concerto. And then also adding a more star power to this concert is our ASO Composer of the Year, young phenom Stephanie Baric. Works have appeared on our River Rhapsody programs. And there have been several commissions done locally of her in chamber music. So we had this existing relationship, and then I have a relationship with the St. Louis Symphony, and she recently had a work premiered by David Robertson up there that really knocked the socks off people, just brought the house down. And I thought, well, let's give that piece its second performance, and that's what you're going to hear opening our season, which is called Ravish and Mayhem. And it's a little bit wild. It's a great crackerjack concert opener. It has Middle Eastern influences. There's a sense of kind of conflict and resolution. The Ravish and Mayhem actually refers to some kind of political strife in that region of the world. But it uses a small orchestra, similar to the way an opera overture might present conflict and then development and resolution. It really functions in that way, even though it's a concert piece. So we've got three pieces on that program, very different, but also small and connected and full of this kind of verve and energy. All three of those pieces will really excite people, I think. And it was important for me, though, that we kept our Composer of the Year prominently featured at the beginning of the Masterwork series. As your listeners know, now after the 4 years now, I suppose, going the Composer of the Year program, we introduce the composer as early as we can so that we can develop this relationship through the course of the season in different genres, different repertoires, and different opportunities, even necessarily maybe to hear the same piece played again. Number two, we bring somebody that has a unique position. He is, well, I shouldn't say unique, but it's a rarefied air these days, somebody who is well-known as both a conductor and a composer, Martin Panteleev. He came to my attention actually because of a relationship that he had with our concertmaster, Kirill Laskarov. They were classmates in Sofia. So they're both Bulgarian. And Kirill came to me and he said, you know, you should really take a look at this conductor. He's doing wonderful things all over the world. He's the principal conductor, the chief conductor of the National Philharmonic in Sofia, the most important orchestra in the country, really phenomenal group. And he's also the resident conductor of the Cape Town Philharmonic. But if you look at his schedule, he's all over the place, including the major London orchestras and things like this. He's well established on the world stage. And Kirill said, well, you know, we'd be so lucky to have him come here. And I said, well, you're classmates with him. Why don't you give him a call? And we connected on Facebook, as, you know, the musical world does now. And we talked about some possibilities, and we're thrilled that he's made it possible to come here to Arkansas from Bulgaria to do a full Masterworks week. And one of the ways in which we enticed him, and I thought would make it that much more interesting for our audiences, was to give him an opportunity to present one of his own pieces. So he has a piece called Archetypes. Very interesting piece that has three different configurations. There's a string version, a chamber orchestra version, and then a full symphony orchestra version, that very large expanded brass and percussion. But it's interesting in the sense that most pieces really don't work in various versions like that equally well. And in this one, it kind of has a flexibility where he can even change the instrumentation based on what forces are available to him. So for me, as a conductor, as a music director, when I think of who I want to bring in as guest conductors, it's often about who can bring an interesting perspective, who can offer something that's new and different to our audiences, and also, very importantly, who can give the orchestra a really healthy, productive experience. Martin's a very accomplished solo violinist as well. So he works very well with string sections, he works well with orchestras, and he's a talented communicator from stage. So I think we really have all of the makings of a very successful week with the orchestra and a great success with our audiences too.
And it will be a very nice way to take the break back to Robinson, that you've got a program that has a lot of panache and colorful personalities, and almost like a sort of healthy farewell.
Absolutely, and I couldn't agree more. And I'm glad you see it that way, because when you look at two Masterworks concerts still outside the Robinson, many people have said, oh, well, you know, those, you must surely just be ready to get back in Robinson, almost like those concerts are kind of, they don't matter as much. But in fact, in some ways, they matter a little bit more to me, because the special attributes of the hall that I mentioned at the top of the interview, I want to maximize the chance to work with those attributes just one more time. And if anything, you know, we're already seeing these extraordinary increases in our subscription, as we might expect with a new hall. So I want to make sure that people who buy a subscription get a fantastic experience for those first two concerts. And it's not a question of our season starting in November, but that we're well into a long run of successful concerts by the time we open the new hall.
To celebrate getting back into the hall, have you planned anything special?
We've been working with the city to create an opportunity for us to say thank you. We're particularly interested in finding a way to communicate to Central Arkansas, particularly the residents of Little Rock, who were so gracious and generous in voting to fund the renovation of the Robinson through the bond election. We're very grateful to them, and we wanted to express this in the best way that we know how. And we're musicians, and that normally means a concert. So we're hoping to do a thank you concert on November 30th. For the citizens of Little Rock. It'll be a free concert. Of course, there'll be a lot more than 2,300 people who would like to attend this concert, so we're working on a ticket lottery in a way that'll make it fair for us to really open this up for everyone. The idea is that this is a concert for Little Rock that says thank you for helping us to renovate our home. And it's a program that I think will really excite people, and also will take advantage of the opportunity to be in front of people who might not necessarily always come to the symphony orchestra. The week before we do that free concert, we'll do our first official performance in the hall, and that's our third Masterworks concert. And the third Masterworks concert really is an exploration of the possibilities of a hall. We run the entire gamut, the scope and scale of orchestral sound and color on that concert. We have everything from a very small, fiery, festive Mozart symphony to the grandiose brass sounds and an increased expansion of the orchestra in Respighi's Pines of Rome. It's a blockbuster program. There's no way around it. Everything on this program is something that is beloved and anticipated enthusiastically by the musicians and myself. I think we'll really get to know the hall as we rehearse this program. It's going to stretch the hall. It's going to stretch our abilities to adjust to a hall, because these are tough pieces, not tough to listen to, but they're orchestral show pieces. They demand virtuosity by the musicians, and they're well-known pieces, so we all know how they're supposed to sound. And I think we'll get to know each other on the new stage as we get to know the new hall. So this program, to some of your listeners, they may recognize the opener. So the very first thing I ever conducted here in Arkansas was the Ruslan and Ludmila Overture of Glinka. And it was when I was doing a trial week here as a music director candidate. There was just something special about the way those performances came off, and they really started with that kind of whip crack of the beginning of Ruslan. And I thought, well, how far we've come in the last six seasons. Why don't we put that piece back as the first, as the similar opener on the Robinson? And for those people who are at both of those occasions, it should be a poignant reminder of the journey that we've shared, and also hopefully a representation of the hope and possibilities of things to come. It was important to me personally that we really enjoy this concert. And are able to, in musicians, we often are only thinking about how things can be better or perfect or more emotive or expressive. And we don't necessarily always take the time to enjoy moments that are fleeting, but maybe even historic. And in this case, opening a new concert hall, I thought it's important for the musicians and myself and us on stage to really appreciate what a special thing this is. And one way to do that is to be on stage with friends. So that led me to looking for a soloist on this program who I knew would be appreciated by the artists on stage, loved by our audiences, but also just someone who would want to share in a special occasion. And Philippe Quint makes his return to Arkansas in a piece that he's known for. He's been nominated for Grammys for this piece, his recordings of this piece. I've performed it with him, and it's the Korngold Violin Concerto. And Philippe has just a special take on this work. It seems to fit his blood and his personality. And the Korngold is a work that has a kind of a spectacle to it. It has a Hollywood sheen poured over it a little bit. There's a sense of event. It's cinematic in scope. And Korngold, of course, was a well-known film score composer, but really, I think history has not been kind to him because people think of him as a film score composer, but in fact, he is simply a tremendously talented composer who happened to write some of the greatest film scores of all time. And this violin concerto is one of the most popular concertos in the eyes of violinists. And of course, Mozart Haffner, of all of the classical, maybe one of, if not the most festive feeling of all of them. It's a tight, compact Mozart symphony. It's his shortest of the late works. And it just is full of that Salzburg fire. When you open a hall, you also have to raise the roof a little bit. And there are very few climaxes in the entire orchestral repertoire that are on the level of Respighi's Pines of Rome. But one of the things about that piece that I think makes it work so well for this program is that while we know the end and how just expansive crescendo, long crescendo, that just lifts the concert hall almost off the ground, it also has some of the most beautiful, subtle, intimate moments of just pairs of instruments, little colors, splashes of sound. And I think when you have a new hall and what you want to do is you want to draw people to the stage and you want with their ears and draw them to interact with the sound around them and to experience this new personality, the hall's acoustic. It's almost kind of personified in a way.
Philip Mann is my guest. And the topic? The 2016-17 Masterworks season. And with this new auditorium, in the way the seating arrangements are, you're going to be looking down on the stage, which I like so much in Mommel. And because you can see better, you can hear better.
Absolutely. And you really hit right on it. I mean, when you build a nice concert hall, it's about the connection to stage. And that connection is everything. It's not just the acoustics. It's the distance from your seat. It's the rake of the audience platform. It's sight lines. It's all of these things that will connect performer to public.
So we've reached halfway through. Ready for Rachmaninoff?
Yes. As I was programming, I started to see a theme develop as we discuss sometimes that friends on stage is a theme, I think, this year. That began with Eliso, and then we found ourselves with Philippe, and now Norman's return.
But not with Brahms.
We've discussed many times what other possibilities there would be here, and there's we've kind of become perhaps emboldened in our conversations in that we've tackled these monumental works of the repertoire together here. I mean, the Brahms concerti are often seen as the most difficult for pianists to play. So those emboldened conversations, I think, naturally led us to the Rachmaninoff Third. If there is another piece that's seen as kind of a mountain to climb and something to aspire to for a pianist, it's the Third Rachmaninoff. And you have to program that piece very carefully. It's a work that still has the orchestra featured right front and center. With the new hall, I wanted the orchestra to really be an equal partner and on display. This is a season to have the orchestra on stage as in the spotlight with the soloist. Anytime the Third Rachmaninoff is on the season or on the bill, that's an event. But it's also quite a feat to behold. A great performance of this is something that will really stick with you. And the combination of repertoire in this program has really grown on me. I mean, when I first put it on paper, I thought, this is a really tasty program. But I found all these new connections and the nuance. And this is a program, I think, that, again, will allow us to explore the hall in new ways. Piano soloist in a hall is a unique attribute of a hall, how well it handles a piano soloist. And you try to design certain aspects of the hall to be conducive to good solo accompaniment, particularly for piano. The other two works on this program have fascinating orchestrational characteristics. The first is the Haydn Variations of Brahms. This is a work that has ancient roots in its musical material of an old chorale, of variations where Brahms explores with changes to orchestration different ways to set this chorale variation with an orchestra. And it's perfect for us to hear the hall in many, many different ways in a short amount of time. It's a work that has kind of a classical elegance and a symmetry to it, but it really also covers the whole spectrum of dynamic range. So there are some beautiful, beautiful pianissimo intimate moments that will really allow people to hear the kind of sparkle of a good acoustic with just a few people playing. And then some really festive grand Brahms moments, some of the best that he ever wrote. And there's another work on here that fits right between the two of them, a composer that has classical roots, that is known for his orchestrational prowess. I'm talking about Samuel Barber, one of the great icons of American composition. And his first essay is a work that I've been wanting to conduct for many years, just haven't had the opportunity. And I'm just so glad that the opportunity fell on this concert to put the Barber there, because the way it fits together with the Brahms and the Rachmaninoff, I think, is a really special and tasty combination. The first essay.
Could you define essay?
It's more of a compositional statement with an emphasis on really beautiful rhetoric. And Barber's language is immediately recognizable. You think of the Adagio for strings. You hear that and you hear it and you recognize it immediately as Barber. That sinewy weaving of close together harmonies in deep emotions that are evoked by listening to it. If anything, the title essay to me just makes me think a little bit of language and of Samuel Barber's language.
So the next one is basically voices.
That's right. Keeping with trying to create a sense of event for a special season, there are few works that accomplish that better than Mahler's Second Symphony. You look at its performance history here in Arkansas, when it's been performed, important occasions, and also you look at the choice of soloists and their connection to Arkansas. For me, Mahler is very central to my repertoire. It was central to my studies in graduate school and beyond. His work as a conductor and composer, the historical performance practice traditions that he created, I wanted to make sure that on this important season that his repertoire was represented strongly. This is an opportunity, I think, to reach out beyond just Little Rock and to bring in the state, bring in the voices of the massed choruses for this work from all the far corners of Arkansas, bring them to downtown Little Rock to our new Robinson, and to share in a very, very powerful experience. This is a work that was written by a young composer, an idealistic composer that thought of the big questions of the universe, truth with a capital T, the afterlife, the cosmos, love, loss, nature, all of those things, all encapsulated within a single work. It has a youthful approach to some of these things, that it's big. It's big in emotions, in all types of emotions, back and forth. The finale of this work, I think, is one of the most profound and moving expressions of hope for humanity, hope for possibility of what we all, you know, it's ineffable in some ways without having to evoke the rhetoric of spiritual traditions. In many ways, it's intended to be a universal statement of spirituality and the future and hope of humanity. And then at the same time, it has a mystical aspect to it. It draws upon nature traditions. And the Second Symphony is the kind of piece that you put on a 100th anniversary program or a 50th anniversary or the beginning or end of a musician tenure. My predecessor, David Itkin, did this on his final concert in Arkansas. And it's, of course, a piece that I've been wanting to do. And so it's been 8 years, I guess, since it's been performed here. And I'm intrigued by the return of our musicians to this piece. Our audiences will remember David's last performance here with this piece. We have two fantastic soloists coming back. Kristen Marie Hill, who your audiences will remember as being that stunning mezzo in our Beethoven Ninth with George Takei and the Schoenberg. It's the first time I've ever performed the Beethoven's Ninth Symphony and was always in every moment aware of the mezzo part. Because it's often an unheralded role on that program, on that piece. And then Kristen Lewis, with tremendous, deep, wide-ranging Arkansas roots, but has made it now onto the highest level of the operatic world stage, and she brings that star power back to Arkansas.
What do you follow that with? This is the first time that you've taken Beethoven and Blue Jeans out of the middle of the year.
That's right. When the schedule came down for opening the Robinson, led us to the conclusion that we're going to be opening the hall in November, traditionally our place for Beethoven and Blue Jeans. The sense of event and how the specialness of opening a hall, I thought, was maybe not the time to be wearing jeans. Now, a lot of people are going to want to get dressed up to open the hall. So let's move Beethoven and blue jeans to another space on the season. And in this case, we thought, let's find a place with great weather where we can enjoy that wonderful street party that we have and the beer and brats out in front of the hall and all of the things that we've come to love about Beethoven and blue jeans downtown. Putting it into April gives us a chance to really enjoy the whole event, not just the performance, but all of those surrounding events with the youth orchestras, the fixture of the ECS steel drum band that people now even request to play at the concerts. So we're thrilled about that. And this is we're drawing the spotlight now at the conclusion of this important season, also back on the orchestra. This is the enduring institution, the legacy of the ASO is really the combination of its musicians. The musicians are the orchestra. So we are featuring Drew Irvin, our concertmaster, on Brooke's violin concerto. And Brooke is, I'm smiling right now saying that. I think when you say Brooke to a violinist, we all smile. And that should tell you a little bit about that piece. It has a special place in all of our hearts. We've all played it. It's one of those works that you learn as a student and then you return to as a professional throughout your career. You know, just because we all love the work. And I think Drew is going to bring his really unique enthusiasm and humor and personality to that work. I can't wait to hear him do the third movement, especially. So to dance with Drew, as it were, in the Brooke Concerto. The two other works on that program feature the orchestra very prominently.
Well, it's a very appropriate overture.
Yes, the Beethoven Consecration of the House overture. You know, you don't get a chance to program this work very often. It's also a little bit longer for a Beethoven overture, so it's a little bit unwieldy to put on a small classical program, and it fits perfectly on this program. And it's written to open a new concert hall. And it didn't quite work for the program in November, but I thought, you know, let's put it on the season somewhere so our audience get a chance to hear this really special work of Beethoven's. And it has a functional utility about it. It opens up with these monolithic chords, just these intonations of these fully voiced chords followed by rests. In other words, he lets you hear the reverberation of the hall. He actually introduces the hall in the way he introduces the piece. So in a way, as you embark on this journey through the overture, he's kind of bringing you into the conversation with the hall and introducing to you to the space in which you're sitting. And that leads us to the Second Symphony of Sibelius. This is a work of tremendous color. It's steeped in nationalistic tradition and perhaps the best example of Sibelius's compositional voice, adopted by many other composers and as an influential component in their own voices. Perhaps more than any other of his works is responsible for his enduring success in programming. It's his most well-known work. It's his most programmed symphony for very good reason. It's very, very effective with audiences. Particularly for me, this was the work on this season that will allow us to be very nuanced and creative in the mixing of sounds on stage. Whereas in the Mahler, you may have the rawness and the power of youth, and in the Pines of Rome, you've got the grandeur of brass and things like this. In Sibelius, you have all of those instruments available, but used in subtle and beautiful fashion. The finale of the Sibelius Second Symphony is also a very effective finale to a season. It will round out the season with those beautiful, voluptuous brass and wind chords that I can't wait to hear the full resonance of our new hall with that piece. This is an opportunity for us to put the spotlight back on the orchestra as we close out the season. And we have a friend on stage with us. In this case, it's Drew Irvin. We ride off into the summer months, then hopefully looking back on a historic and successful year for the ASO.
That was Philip Mann, Arkansas Symphony Music Director, Conductor, creating the symphony's season concerts. As he passes on the energy and excitement he feels, if you haven't already signed up, the first two Masterworks concerts are in the Montmel Performing Arts Center, and the orchestra returns to the renovated Robinson Auditorium in November in downtown Little Rock. Sunday matinee performances are free for students K-12 when accompanied by a ticketed adult. Let the students in on the excitement. Performances Saturdays at 7:30 and Sundays at 3 p.m. For tickets, call 501-666-1761 or visit online arkansassymphony.org. And that concludes this week's program. Please join us next weekend at the same time. I'm Ann Nicholson. Thank you for listening.
The Art Scene is a presentation of UALR Public Radio.